My name is Walter Hartwell White. I live at 308 Negra Arroyo Lane, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87104. To all law enforcement entities, this is not an admission of guilt. I am speaking to my family now. Skylar, you are the love of my life. I hope you know that. Walter Jr., you're my big man. There are going to be some things that you'll come to learn about me in the next few days. I just want you to know that no matter how it may look, I only have you in my heart.
Hello and welcome to Cavaliers Break Bad, the Breaking Bad podcast that will soon be going out of business because the Breaking Bad industry is over. It's all over now, it's baby blue. So I'm Saro.
I'm Creepy.
All right, so let's get started. So it was an emotionally taxing day for us because... Yeah. Breaking Bad ended, and usually what we do is we watch the episode, we kind of maybe take a moment, sometimes we don't get that chance, we'll just watch it twice, take notes, and go and do the podcast from that. We felt we couldn't do that this week.
We just couldn't.
It was just a bit too much, so we are doing this kind of without notes.
I took a couple from memory.
And having seen the episode once, I think we'll be alright. I have a pretty... strong memory of how this episode turned out.
I was that focused, you know?
Yeah, and anything we miss, we're going to be doing a big recap podcast later on for the season stroke series, and then, of course, we'll be back for 5A and 4.
And 5B. Oh,
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, we kind of just did that over the past 2 months. But yeah. So, like, this isn't the end of the podcast, really, but it's the end of the series. And, I mean... Generally, I think what I took from this finale was that they were kind of doing this three ends. It was like you got Ozymandias was one ending, Granite State was another ending, Felina was the ending, and the third ending. And one was, you know, just unspeakable horror, kind of the Empire crumbling down and taking out anyone who was in the Fallout Zone. Granite State was just this incredible sense of melancholy, just not only kind of despair, but just such a still, frozen sense of despair, which, you know, New Hampshire kind of had. And then Felina was all about this sense of acceptance that, you know, what we can't... We're not going to punish Walt, we're not going to redeem Walt. Walt's end is about self-realization and ending as he lived, alone, surrounded by... the thing he truly loved, which was himself and his chemistry.
Yeah.
So, let's start from the beginning. From the beginning.
From the very beginning, the cold open of this.
Well, unfortunately, they didn't really get to do a flashy cold open
for this one. Yeah, no, it was very functional.
It wasn't entirely as functional as I think you say. They didn't have time to... Vince didn't have time to really... do anything too flashy for the cold open, because he had so much to do in that time. And that's in line with, you know, because he directed Face Off, which was a possible series finale. He thought that the series may not get renewed, so he filmed that as a potential ending, and it works as one. So I kind of took that as the blueprint of what we might see. And that episode, as great as it is, also had a quite functional cold open. But this one, I think it's really nice because it's all about this idea of, I just need this one lucky break from God or from luck or, you know, a man of science, a man who works on predicting the odds and his own kind of sense. You know, Breaking Bad is a show about actions that, you know, everything's caused by Walt. Everything's about, you know, his own sense of agency and his own influence on him, his life, and the people around him. And so I just thought it was fitting that in the first moments of the final episode, we just get, all right, now this one time, I just need to get lucky. I can't maneuver the car keys into existence. They just need to be here. And they are. So I thought that was nice.
Mm. Yeah. And it is kind of funny. Also, kind of reminded me just the way the lights pass by. It kind of reminded me of Buried almost, Ep 10, like with that cold open and how kind of had the X-Files vibe a little bit to it. The lights kind of passing by a little bit kind of had that.
And the first shot was really interesting as well because it's, you know, that kind of close-up on the frosted windows. And it looked both... It recalled the first shot of Blood Money, which was just an ultra-close-up on the pool, the empty pool.
Yeah.
And it also kind of looked like crystal about to be cracked, which is fitting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I thought I really liked that as a beginning because, yeah, you know, everything that happens after this is all through Walt's design, but it all hinges on that one lucky break, which he gets, of course, because it's his TV series.
Mm. And you know, it is like, it is very interesting kind of, we have kind of seen that idea before. I suppose he raises it in Fly when he's talking about, I calculated the odds there. They're astronomical when he's kind of talking about the plane and everything.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, like, there's so much about, like, well, not really all that much, really, but there's kind of just these little hints at, you know, the impossibility of, like, chance and chaos and all this kind of, you know, the reality of chain reactions and change and matter and how there's just a lot of rungs to a very complicated ladder. And this is just one of them.
And
a lot hinges on complete and total chance and chaos. So,
yeah. And but it's kind of Walt's first real acknowledgement of that. He's not calculating the odds. He's just kind of sending a prayer or a... So it's a fitting twist of character in the final moments.
Yeah. And then we get the Marty Rollins...
Yeah, we get the Marty Rollins El Paso song. And this was a theory floating around the internet the weeks before. I don't know if you'd read
it. Oh, it was a fair while before. As soon as the title names were released.
Well, when the title names were released, I thought Felina was a placeholder. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, I just thought it was this, like, placeholder title that... It wasn't the actual name.
Oh, right.
And it was just they put it like that because it was an anagram of finale. And then, of course, the title ended up being, you know, it's an anagram of finale, so that makes sense. And then there's the reference to the song El Paso about an outlaw who comes back to town to take care of business, you know, see his girl and die, which is actually pretty fitting for the... for this episode.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And absolutely. Then there's the other one that it's... Oh, what is it?
It's blood, meth, and tears.
So iron,
it's iron, lithium,
sodium.
Sodium, yeah, which are the chemical components of blood, meth, and tears.
Well, there's some debate about lithium and meth.
Yeah,
I don't know about that one. I think
it's just fun. It's just fun.
Well,
really.
I'm just like whether or not the writers intended that. It's kind of, or if they sort of were aware of that when they chose the title. I mean, I imagine that was a weird kind of. Maybe they kind of put the song in and then they realised, oh, this song, you know, has Felina. That's an anagram of finale. I'd be interested to know how that all came about. I haven't had a chance to listen to the Insider podcast yet, so that's a shame. But anyway, from Marty Rollins, we go to Dave Porter and then... Okay, so Walt's in...
the gas station.
In the gas
immediately
station.
Immediately after. Yeah, I love that.
And
he's from the New York... He's from the New Yorker.
Oh, yeah. And this is also, you know, we're getting big wide shots. And this is like something Vince Gilligan really loves.
Kind of reminded me of Paris, Texas at first. Yeah. Like just that first couple of shots, but yes.
And so where did you think in the episode the Denny's was going to be?
I didn't really know. I almost assumed that it was that we wouldn't see anything from the flash forwards. And I kind of like because you know they are given so much credence on their own terms in the cold opens of Live Free or Die and Blood Money that I almost felt like you didn't need it to some degree. And I mean they are brushed over pretty quickly, more just for structure and kind of cohesion than
and
actual
also-
necessity to see them because everyone's seen them. Everyone knows what they're getting at, and they know the point of them.
Although what's really interesting is when they go back to the one from Blood Money, which is a very dramatic one, because, I mean, they kind of underplay the one from Live Free or Die, but the one in Blood Money, there's that really dramatic music, and they kind of slow it down, whereas this one, it's very matter-of-fact.
Yeah.
So I like that that sort of contrast of what was once this shocking, dramatic flash forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's now just, this is just who he is.
It is, yeah, because a lot of it plays on kind of the suspense, like in not knowing like the context surrounding it, but kind of having the context around it. You kind of,
well,
and also having like used that tension before, you kind of can't be like, look, he's taking the rice and like, oh, I didn't know that was coming.
But no. They kind of... you can see also the change in plan between Live Free or Die and Blood Money now that you've seen the episode. Because in Live Free or Die, he's very downtrodden and very, like, much more tragic. And then, because as they'd broken the finale, more or less, by the time Blood Money rolled around, he's much more lax, and that's why he says, "Hi, Carol." You know, he's much kind of more accepting and ready to die. So there's not as... I feel like Live Free or Die was a bit... It's not inconsistent, like it doesn't not work or anything, but it was a mislead as to what exactly was Walt's headspace was at the time. Whereas the "Hi, Carol" thing makes more sense, having seen Felina.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the gas station, when he pretends to be the New York Times.
Oh, that's... is so great. And like the thing is, like, I was wondering at the end of last week, I was like, it would be satisfying. You like Gretchen and Elliot, their involvement last week as a motivation for him to come back. I would have been satisfied with that alone.
Well, I thought that was it.
I thought that was it for them. And then he's like, you can see him very clearly trying to find out where they live. And I was like, no.
And then you see them. Way. And then I think, is Walt going to come to the house? And then he's right there.
No. And then. What was it? There was a really long take. It was really quite held for quite a long time. It was Gretchen and Elliot coming in the front doors and then turning off the security and then Walt coming in and closing the other doors and then walking
before
in.
Before that happens, maybe you even missed it because it was quite subtle, was when they first walk in, like they've got that weird
courtyard. And he's sitting down.
He's sitting in the courtyard.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, then they have that really long take. Well, they have a few long takes,
yeah,
actually.
That's the thing, is that naturally, like, thank God, like, people in TV are realising that it's actually quite a useful and affecting technique to not cut constantly. So, you know, the reality is it's a more expensive technique. It's a more difficult
technique.
It can be, but like if there's minimal camera movement and it's kind of just Walt walking around like that, it works really well. I think it's completely justified and probably at times more efficient. But with this, like, when a good kind of long take is happening, you're kind of wondering, like, when will this please end? But also a little bit of like, God, please keep going. Like, how long can they really push this? This is fucking excruciating.
Well, I know it just went on forever. My heart was in my mouth. Because there's just that whole... It just gets ridiculous. And it's like, and plays out got, like a home invasion film.
Yeah,
it's
and
like you're
really
watching
got,
Funny
like,
Game.
Very, very... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. We'll touch on the Hanukkah kind of vibe. Like, it's really Hanukkah vibe to this. And like, also just... Particularly with that kind of very austere kind of like long take, kind of just like, yep, you're stuck in this moment. You're going to watch this moment. You're going to squirm.
But it was so much more excessive than I thought they were going to do.
And I loved it.
He just kind of moved around and they just pushed the sort of like, you know, he was looking at pictures. He was walking around and, you know, the way they chose to do that was brilliant. But this started this whole sort of cinematic...
It's a very cinematic kind of double focus of like... You know, the focus on Elliot and Gretchen in the frame, and then very deep in the background, like you've got Walt kind of out of focus, just kind of doing his own thing, walking around. You're just so unsettled.
But
just
it
by
started
presence.
The whole kind of visual calling card of this episode.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
Walt is like this kind of ghost floating around New Hampshire. He's constantly just kind of appearing and fading away, and he's in the background, and he's sort of this half there present. It's like. His story wrapped up, and that's the thing that, you know, Breaking Bad always did so well, was it sort of gave events that never really were, there was some pretty ridiculous stuff, like the face being half blown up, but, you know, it took just kind of more or less ordinary things and gave them a supernatural edge, and that's what I felt
absolutely.
Like Walt... was doing this whole time. He was just like a ghost throughout the entire episode. He'd come back kind of at peace with himself just to push all, you know, to shore up everything he'd done wrong throughout the series. And then there's that great scene. And you first get that in the scene with Gretchen and Elliot. All right. So one of the things that I found bizarre about this scene was when Elliot pulls the letter opener and he says to him, "If we're going to do this, Elliot, you're gonna need a bigger knife. And I'm like, you sound so much like Jonathan Banks right now. He dead on sounds exactly like Mike. And that's the thing, he's kind of become this world-weary, smart, very at peace with himself kind of guy. And I'm like, well, maybe that's
what I don't know at peace, maybe resigned.
Just resigned, to, yeah, but,
you know,
in a certain kind of sense,
like, resolved and aware of exactly how things will play out for himself. But yeah, there's also, you know, just when Walt's presence in this scene, particularly once the red dots show up,
yeah,
he's gone from being like this criminal mastermind now. Like, you see it from Gretchen and Elliot's point of view. Like, they're old. It's like an old friend who you don't see for 20 years, then they turn up vomit stained. As far as you're concerned, they're just psychotic. Just as far as like Walt Heisenberg whatever goes, like he's just something else. Like you see him there from their point of view, you're like, how could this guy run a drug operation? He's just gone completely off his rocker. He's just absolutely insane.
But the thing about Walt is he's always done this thing of, you know, hiding and kind of leaving this double life, and you always see his plans, he's kind of bumbling around. Whereas what's, you know, it's such a big shift in this episode, he just kind of walks in, makes his presence known. There's no subtlety, he just appears, you know, to haunt everyone. But then, you know, he gets the money onto the table, and then I just love, you mind picking that up, Gretchen, and just putting it on the table so it doesn't get lost in the furniture.
And he doesn't even have a gun or anything. Like, as far as they know, he's just a crazy presence, so they're just kind of going along with everything he says. Yeah. It's a whole kind
of... And they're kind of like, we'll call the police eventually.
Yeah. And like, oh my god, it's just so... And it's... I can't wait to rewatch everything with Gretchen and Elliot, having it having come to this conclusion. Like, particularly, like, just, you know, like, all the stuff in season one, like, and the bags in the river episode 3, even though it's only the cold open, where he's talking about science, and, like, yeah, right, what makes up a human being, and their birthday party, I'm pretty sure it's episode 5 or 6, and I think, you know.
It's 6, it's Grey Matter.
Yeah.
No, it's, wait, 5.
5, yeah.
5.
So, it's so, so, you know. Seeing what, just thinking about the fact that we've seen so much change, but as far as like two characters that through which you can buy kerosene,
yeah, they haven't seen.
They've seen Walt go from who he was in Grey Matter episode 5, just this quite, you know, he was always so brilliant, but he never quite.
He just didn't have the drive.
He just couldn't do it. To him telling Gretchen to fuck off in season 3.
2.
Fuck you. 2.
Peekaboo.
Still the limp caterpillar.
Yeah.
Phase.
But bald.
Yeah. And now, just
yeah, jump, I know. Jump. They never, jump. They never got to see proper Heisenberg.
They never got to but see.
That, I know. It's.
And that just makes it almost scarier. Is that? Just, you know, he's just psychotic. He's not like a mastermind. He's just.
But
psychotic.
It is so shocking seeing, you know, this really. I mean, it's one thing kind of seeing him in his hut in New Hampshire, but just seeing him with his, you know, his baggy jeans and his stained kind of sleeping shirt and the beard in this amazingly luxurious kind of excessive house. He's so out of place and just looks so terrible that you really feel the shock all over again.
Yeah.
From like Live Free or Die. I'm like, fuck, I can't believe that's Walter.
Yeah.
And it's also, but brilliant. It also works as a plot point, of course, because how does he get around vaguely being unseen? It's, you know, it's because no one knows what he looks like really anymore. Yeah. So that's clever in retrospect that they did that. Anyway, but let's talk about
just quickly though, there's one line that he says to him, he calls them the beautiful people, which of course is a reference to the idea. It's kind of just become a popular thing now, but of course to Baby You're a Rich Man, the Beatles kind of idea of the beautiful person, the rich, wealthy, you know, socially acceptable kind of thing. And, you know, it kind of just shows his disdain for just the idea that it's kind of got to be acceptable. Nah, you're an emperor. They're emperors. And again, it's a show about emperors.
I think that what,
you know, the reality is he knows, like, he's just making them stack his money. He's like, look at what I've done. He's showing them. He's forcing it in front of them that he's done. He's done, even if it's not of worse to them, he's done something. He's in making sure he impresses that fact upon them.
Yeah, but I think that what he does here is kind of fair play, to be honest.
In what respect?
Well, it's not excessively. All right, well, just this decision, you know, everyone was kind of like this, you know, potentially this was too much of a happy ending. If you go back to this thing, I think it was kind of such a big deal, and a lot of people kind of looked past it just because it was just such a what the fuck moment. I mean, it was the most shocking part of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because everyone had sort of predicted one part or the other of the previous, you know, yeah, of the rest, what happened after, and I mean, this. But
we predicted kind of like, oh, I mean, I suppose you predicted a large number of the things that did happen.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
Really. Well, I predicted a lot of stuff that happened before this, and then I adjusted my predictions kind of based on the last episode. Like, for instance, yeah, I knew that Lydia was going to get poisoned once they started bringing the tea back
thing,
into
yeah,
it.
The stevia thing.
Yeah, that's yeah, kind of tipped me off the same way that Huel being more into it tipped me off that in Confessions they were. So anyway,
talking about the rice and cigarette. Yeah.
Exactly. And Huel's Rules.
Everyone who
yeah, for the love of God,
see
watch
the funny
Huel's
or die
rules.
Huel's Rules. It's amazing.
It's so funny.
It's great.
And that's actually the one question they didn't answer. What happened to Huel?
And I'm glad that somebody's like, everyone's just acknowledging.
Can we just make Huel's Rules canon?
I love it. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Yep, that's canon. Well, that would have been a good post-credit sting. Just, where's that Hank coming back?
Huel. I got a massage at 3.
But this is such a big deal. What he does here is that he's giving them... All right, so think back about, like, the whole charity site that Walt Jr. sets up in season 2 and how much that incenses Walt. You know, they have to know it's from me.
Yeah.
And he goes from that to not only giving the money and them not knowing it's from him, but from the people who represent, you know, his kind of loss, you know, his
yeah,
emasculation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, Gretchen and Elliot are the symbol of everything that went wrong, you know, before we saw him in the pilot. They kind of represent, you know... They are the root of what made him break bad in the first place.
Yeah.
So to have them be the benefactors for Walt Jr. is such a major step. And it's the key to understanding his character going into this episode. He wants to redeem... Sorry. That's completely the wrong word. He doesn't want to redeem himself. He wants to pick up the pieces of everything he's broken the best he can, and only he will know about it, you know? Only all he knows is to know that the people that he cares about and the things that he cares and kind of his vague sense of justice are tied up, and that he's happy with that,
yeah,
you know, himself. And this extends all throughout the episode, and I'll pick up on this as we go through
yeah,
what
yeah,
he does.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Anyway, so I just think that's an amazing...
Oh, it's like, I think it's probably my favourite part of the episode in terms of, like, technical achievement and also just in terms of the tensity of it. Like, obviously, this was kind of a very cathartic kind of experience, basically, from when Walt's at the Nazis on. And, I mean, it kind of unfolds, really, almost as you expect it to. And I think probably one of, you know, all these really cathartic beats, like... shooting Jack in the face before he can get out where the money is. And
yeah, well, we'll get there.
I mean, yeah, we'll get there and, like, Todd being...
We'll get there.
You know, we'll get there. But, you know, just this scene on its own, because it was so completely, thoroughly, totally unexpected, like, majorly...
But
you know,
it's such a perfect climax to an aspect of his character. You know,
oh,
he
yeah,
has the money,
absolutely,
and then he gives it. He manages to get it to the family and completely, and not just remove himself from that process. You know, remove his sort of credit, but to give it to Gretchen and Elliot
and make them feel some. It's still very Heisenberg, as much as it's Walt caring for his family.
Yeah,
it's still very Heisenberg in making the people who are going to do it and receive the praise for doing it make them feel a tremendous amount of pain and guilt. For, like, giving this meth lord's drug money to his son. They're going to feel a tremendous amount of pain doing it.
But usually I don't defend Walt, but I feel like this is exactly what the Schwartzes owed Walt. You know what I mean? Like, they...
Ooh.
Yeah, I think so.
But defying the fact that, you know, he lived off people's misery. Like, I don't really...
I completely agree. I don't think that
it's entirely, like, just desserts. Like, hey, fear for your lives from snipers. Who does
no, he made it clear that they'd only do it if they failed to take the money.
Yeah, but they've opened a, and I mean, you can talk about the financial motives behind it, but they've opened a, I think the fact that they opened a drug rehabilitation, spent $28 million on a drug rehabilitation center, does come a lot from the fact that they feel some kind of, not responsibility, but maybe just in terms of, like, they would have picked up on Walt's pride and, like, been aware of the fact that they should, if Walt was the one to create that problem, then they should be the ones to rectify it in a way.
Yeah.
And that comes not from a space of responsibility, but, you know, they would feel some kind of guilt or shame that the man that they knew and the thought they knew and was so much a part of their organization, so much a part of, like, what they are.
But they would know their sort of role in creating Heisenberg. I think they'd be aware of that. And I think Gretchen particularly knows, you know, she would have put the pieces together after that meeting and how it all came out. So,
but I think, you know, ultimately...
So I even got the sense from them that they were kind of like, yeah, we'll do it.
Gretchen's hesitation. And, like, Elliot's just like, okay, yes, we'll do it.
But I think that stems from, because he's just planning on doing it and calling the police, and she's actually still invested in him. You know, he's treating him like the crazy man who's broken into the house. She's treating him like the friend who actually has some investments. Like, I can't give this drug money to your kids. You know, you are better than that.
They do feel the weight and the guilt of the drug money, though. And that's the thing, is that... That's what will ultimately make them squirm, is that they have kind of been complicit within it. And that's what he's kind of, you know, getting off on, I suppose.
Yeah, I think he likes dirtying the Schwartzes. Yeah. And I don't think it's the worst
thing. It's a grey area. Let's just say that.
Oh, nice, mate. No, I mean, I didn't feel bad that I enjoyed...
Notice we didn't use Southern American accents there. We're quite proud of that.
Yeah, I didn't feel bad about kind of enjoying the fate of the Schwartzes. It was not, he didn't do anything really wrong. He didn't actually hurt them. He just scared them a bit. He just made the beautiful people have to deal with dirty, drug-running Miss Heisenberg. So, you know, I'm... But anyway...
It's a pretty phenomenal... But when he makes
the lasers appear, I'm just like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, yeah, what I know. Is this? You know, it's just... Because it is. It's just like this. It's like a magic trick that, you know, he just kind of waves his hand and summons these lasers onto their chest, and you just think, this is just escalated. But who's he hired? Yeah, How's he done this? This is... It's awesome, but it's just a bridge too far.
Yeah.
But when I saw him pull up the car and I saw two people running, I immediately picked it. And you could hear me go like, oh my God, and you were going, what? Shut up. What is it? I immediately knew it was Skinny Pete when I saw two people run, and then sure enough, there they are. And what I love a brilliant
that.
Way.
Such a good way to just bring them back, but also see them off. It's kind of like that they're, you know, as much as the cycle kind of goes and you know, one emperor will come and another will go, you know, the reality is that the people at the center of it, and kind of Skinny Pete and Badger have kind of been the two characters throughout the whole show that actually kind of link the audience to the effects of it and like any kind of world in the drug culture.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, to bring them back, they're still talking about the fact that, yo, I thought you were cooking again, man. Oh, it's the bomb. It's better than ever. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I love the whole thing felt kind of like shady, like morality-wise. You're just like, you're a joker.
Yeah, no.
You're such a joker, Skinny Pete. I've missed you.
It's such a good way to bring them back. I just had kind of a moment of sheer bowing at the feet of Vince Gilligan, because I'm like, I'd love to see Badger and Skinny Pete in, but there's no way they can fit them in. And the way he did it was so brilliant and tied it in. And you know, it's a really great reveal of Walt doing something so unbelievable and so over the top with the lasers. And it's like, he's hired hitmen. I mean, it's awesome, but this is a bit ridiculous. And then it's just Badger and Skinny Pete with laser pointers. It's so done.
And it's that kind of efficient Heisenberg thing of like, he won't like necessarily kind of go out of his way to actually make an entirely elaborate plan. He will rely on the fact that people, if they're motivated enough to kind of do something, that's enough. You know, like, but he doesn't actually need to go and get snipers. He can just say that there are snipers, and that's it's a very Heisenberg thing, I reckon.
But it also feels more like a Lambert thing, because this is, I'm going to distinguish like Lambert, Walt, and Heisenberg. Because Lambert's just
he's the lost,
he's the kind of new one where he's so resigned that he's incredibly effective in kind of manipulating people and doing what needs to be done, and vaguely for good.
Yeah.
But then, anyway, so Vince Gilligan last week gave us the clue woodwork.
Oh.
I had no idea how that was going to be.
Oh, I love that. That was beautiful. After the ad break.
So a few people didn't pick it up. Shame on you if you didn't, because you should have been listening to our season 3 cast.
Callback to Kafkaesque.
It was a callback to Kafkaesque.
When he's in the when he's in the room with, I don't know what the character's name is, but Jerry,
yeah,
the Enna. Well, Jerry Burns.
Alex Anonymous, yeah.
Yeah, Jerry Burns, the former cocaine addict who killed his daughter. That guy, you know.
Yeah.
But the actor's name is Jerry Burns.
And he's talking about the box he made that you know, he liked to say that he gave to his mom. It was the one thing he was proud of, and then he sold it for pot.
Yeah.
And
some really, really, really good match cuts in this episode.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got Jesse turning around, like, I mean, after this beautiful little sequence with him working on the wood box, and it kind of took me a couple of seconds, and then I was like, oh, he's talking about the box he made in Kafka. Oh,
I got it immediately. I was just like, box, Jesse. Oh, it's the Kafkaesque box.
I didn't, I mean, like, I don't, I can't remember, but there were like a few kind of seconds at the beginning with some like very nice kind of sound design or just Dave Porter doing his thing and just really nice kind of color schemes and out of focus and everything. I was like, oh, that looks really, really nice.
Mm.
And then I saw Jesse working on wood and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of what's,
but then you've got the match cut at the end with him kind of turning around and then him being stopped by the being snapped back to reality by the
chains. And also when you see him, you know, his beard's grown out and his hair's grown long and it's really kind of uncomfortable but brilliant that Jesse and Walton in these final episodes are just physically so scarred from their time together. But I think that what's really important about that woodwork scene is, and you kind of wonder why they put it in, apart from just kind of this nice nod to the past, is that because they're not going to have, like, a flash forward, Jesse's living happily ever after, at the end, I think what's really important is that you see Jesse is not fundamentally a bad person. He can be a smart person and an industrious person, and someone who cares, someone who has something to live for. And I think that it really suggests that after he gets freed by Walt, in hindsight, that whole scene suggests he could do something good with himself. Not necessarily good in the sense that he'll, you know, go become a missionary or something.
He's going to go become a lumberjack.
Which is the fucking end of Dexter.
And
if I spoiled that for you, you know what? I don't care. That show just went so fucking far downhill, it's not funny. So fuck it. He became a lumberjack. Seriously. Anyway.
So, like, at the beginning of this, we're going to have to put, like, a disclaimer, like, not only spoilers for Breaking Bad, but also Dexter.
No. Good, because maybe it will discourage people from bothering to watch it.
Just made the executive decision.
Yeah, maybe that's I should.
Yeah.
Anyway, but it's important, this scene, because it just briefly reminds you that there is more to Jesse Pinkman than his dealings with Walt, and that there is I'd hope for him that, you know, he's not going to take care of Brock and he's not going to do amazing things. He doesn't want to do amazing things. He simply wants a kind of sense of his own life. And I think that's possible because he's fundamentally a good person. And that's what the box reminded us all of. But holy fuck, was that a rough cut?
Oh yeah,
not a rough cut. Like it was a very smooth match cut. But in terms of the
cut, it was a brutal cut. Yes.
Yeah,
and speaking of brutal kind of match cuts, and it's been interesting because kind of in somebody on the net somewhere, it might have been Dustin Rolls, did a side by side comparison of Walt walking through his front door on his birthdays, and you've got the one from the pilot, then you've got one where he's Heisenberg, and then you've got one as Lambert at the from Blood Money. And telling, but like there's a match cut here again when he walks back into the house, because there are very few flashbacks in Breaking Bad, and it's really not a Breaking Bad technique to flashback a whole lot. There's like obviously the WW when Hank's on the toilet, and not very many others really spring to mind.
I mean,
repeats. Thing to like flashback and like time jump, but it's another thing to actually replay replay a scene or just moments that have actually been previously filmed from another episode. So when it cuts back to Hank mentioning going on the ride along and Walt says, we'll see, and then it cuts to like the same frame in a completely destroyed house with like Lambert kind of standing there just being like, oh, it's all gone to so much shit.
Yeah, but he's kind of
went
like
to all the shit.
He's grieved for it. I also think that was just a way to have Hank in the finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite nice.
But the way they did that whole return to the house in blood, because, I mean, the Live Free or Die flash forward, the way they dealt with it was pretty much just shortened it. But the Blood Money one was more smartly integrated because they cut the music and kind of de-romanticized it and took that sense of dread away. It was just what he did. And then, you know, as you said, they gave the flashback. And then you get one last look at the house.
Yeah.
As he's going. And then he closes the door, which was a nice touch. Because it's like, fuck, that's the last we're going to see.
And it was kind of, I don't know if it was marked, but it felt very significant when it happened. You're like, goodbye, house. And like, you can get that with the finale.
But it was earned. Because Walt was actually saying goodbye to the house. And so were we. It wasn't just like...
And it's funny
because... It wasn't like turning off the light. What's the famous finale where they turn off the lights at, I think it's a hospital or a...
Oh, who
it's a who it's cares? A it's a trope some, anyway.
Yeah, but you know it's kind of very you know it's very interesting that kind of you know the again so many kind of moments where we see last vestiges of Walt's soul, like when he sells the Pontiac Aztec and all these different things, but he's saying goodbye to the White House. And Heisenberg scrawled on the wall. So, you know,
everything's been ruined by
the sanctum
Heisenberg,
has been putrefied and kind of like the virus has just kind of, you know, just worked its way into every cell and just taken over and just spread itself further and further and further like a tumor.
Like a cancer.
That was really bad. I'm sorry.
No, I think the Walt is a cancer metaphor. You're not the first.
No.
Anyway, then we get the great scene with Todd and Lydia. I like your shirt, my blast.
Oh, gosh.
And it's kind of like Lydia, just the way she takes that compliment. It's like, oh, that you mean it's a blast, but oh, thank you. Please tell me those two never had sex, because that would keep me up at night.
No.
And then Princess Leia and the cast of Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah, okay. Again, like, kind of like Breaking Bad kind of extra... I suppose fanfic for the lols, but
no, that's not fanfic.
No. It's just parody or like appropriation, I suppose, to a degree. Just retelling the same story. What the Flula Borg? He's just great. He just has a lot of fun.
Yeah. What the Google?
Talking about
the
Walter and his titty vidies, his fighty titties, his Walter vidies.
Walter and Skyrim and Pink Man
says hello, Walter. Where are you?
And then the cast of Friday Night Lights turned up. It's great. But
Princess
Leia
and the nerdy man from Friday Night Lights.
Anyway, so this scene, once again, it's like, you know, these two are just meeting and then Walt just kind of finds his way into frame before they notice him. What's
and
really important, it's an important plot point also that he was in the cafe.
Yeah.
You don't see him enter. He's already in the cafe.
He's already in there.
Because he's put ricin in the stevia. Man, that could have fucked up.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, again, we were kind of talking about the Funny Games vibe with Elliot and Gretchen. The way you kind of, like, notice him in the frame after a while, it kind of takes you a minute. It's kind of very much like, say, beginning of Amour when they're in the crowd or even the final shot of...
Yeah, very
Hidden,
similar to Amour.
Final shot of Hidden where you notice the kids at the... you know, you have to look for them in the frame before
Although
you see
them. Although it's not nearly as subtle as that. He's like one person in a frame of two or three people. But
yeah, I know. But
I know.
Like,
I do know what you mean.
And in terms of like having referred to Slovis kind of having fun with kind of a... kind of like Haneke-esque vibe at times... It had the camera movement and the way things... I mean, it's not wholly unique, but it's enough to evoke a response. And that's something that we will be looking forward to doing our Haneke retrospective, because we've just been crapping on about it too much.
So. Yes, you need to, after this podcast, if you miss us, go watch all the films of Michael Haneke, and we will be doing a podcast on him. Mm. But anyway, that's not what we're talking about at the moment.
Moving from this scene, I suppose, while we're still on it. It is very interesting to kind of see just how marked the stevia thing becomes. Like, there's a shot here that reminds me of this shot from The Usual Suspects, Which is just so focused on a coffee cup. But here, unlike that completely technical, soulless, like just Tarantino-esque kind of just showing of like, oh yeah, look what we can do. It's great. This actually has a point. And Bryan Singer, and I think it was written by Christopher McQuarrie.
Bryan Singer.
We're not dickheads at all. Anyway, it's so marked, and just seeing the stevia go in, you're like, I can't see the rising flakes quite. But
yeah. it was good that they. I was curious. It was like, good if they that they did do that, because if they'd given her the stevia and then like, oh, by the way, I put, you know, rising in your stevia, it would just be such a, like, lame reveal.
Yeah.
So the fact that they gave it away early, I think...
You kind of just, like, that... I mean, for the people who've kind of been, like, reading up or kind of just been thinking about it and, like, theorizing, like, it's just... It's like, yeah, this is... Yeah. Like, that's as big a reveal as you're going to get.
I know. Like, and it's just, like, that ending makes the most sense. You don't need a shock here. And that's kind of a thing with this episode is, it's like, it's... So, and Vince Gilligan, I think, said sometime recently, the best surprise is sometimes no surprise. And I think in this case, he's right. Although there was the big surprise with the Schwartzes, but other than that, this proceeded in a more or less predictable way. And I was fine with that. The devil was in the details. But yeah.
But it's kind of funny just seeing that kind of play out the way it did. Like, I really wanted the ricin to be yet another thing that, like, because the ricin is one of those things where it's kind of about long-lasting. Like, I mean, the very drug itself is a metaphor for the role of ricin in the show, which is, you know, this thing that just... You
introduce it slow-acting,
like, kind of just, like, you know, eventually it'll pay off. And I think almost to some degree, like, to fulfill that metaphor within the show, it has to eventually pay off. But... And I mean, of course, like, the seeds literally have been sown before they are, like, I mean, obviously, like...
Well, the beans.
Yeah.
More accurately.
Have been sown, like, before you even notice it, and then by the time that symptoms are starting to become clear, you know, you're already fucked. So, I mean, with the stevia kind of been in there for, and the chamomile tea been in there for a while, but, you know, I almost wanted it to not be used. I almost wanted the ricin to kind of just remain this potential energy. No,
it's so at odds with what the show is. But the thing is also, we'll talk about the end, the ricin is like almost the very last thing that the show really deals with.
Yeah, I suppose.
So in terms of it having a big place in the finale, it did. Yeah. But also the fact that he mentions to Lydia, you know, you come here every time, 11 a.m., 10 a.m.
10 a.m. on a Tuesday.
You see, this is what happens when we don't have notes. We would fuck up.
I helped.
But it's just kind of a nice... It's sort of sews up a plot hole, but it's nice. Like, Lydia's downfall is her fastidiousness and her predictability and her... What's the word? I don't know. Just her kind of businesswoman-like... way of operating.
He knows
where she'll be and the table she'll be. And they've set this up with Lydia's character that she has this just distinct way of doing everything that she would sit at the same table the whole time. So it makes sense. But what I also love about this scene is that Lambert's doing all the acting, you know? He's kind of playing, I'm a desperate man. Please give me a job. I've spent all my money. And of course, the audience at this point knows. So, because usually you get, when Walt does go so all in with a performance, you get the performance and then you get the reveal. We know from the start that he doesn't need money, that he's actually quite free and empowered at this time. So that it's all this brilliant act to get Lydia and Todd to fall for it. Mm, and I love how Todd sort of, we have to kill him. We shouldn't have come back, Mr. White.
Yeah, no.
Poor Todd.
He's an adorable idiot.
And also a psychopath.
And a psychopath, that goes without saying. But, so from here I think we go to Marie calling Skylar.
Yes.
It's funny because it's such a thankless kind of goodbye to Marie, but, like...
But she ends gossiping. It's so perfect.
She was a bit of a thankless kind of presence the whole time.
Except she really came into her own in these last days.
She really did. But it was kind of like a reversion, like, back to...
But that's all right, because, I mean, it wasn't a reversion within the show. It was just kind of the way they used her in the... Really called back to the pilot and the way she was, she spent the last time gossiping. But it's also another one of those nice touches of, you know, pulling back and seeing how Walt is being viewed by other characters, and he's just created this mythic. He's popping up. He's going to post his manifesto online. It was really quite funny in a weird way. Marie, poor Marie, lost her husband because of this bastard. But what can I say?
And it was kind of, it was really, really nicely revealed. Like, I think Skylar hangs up and then says 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and then slowly you're like, what? 5 minutes? Oh, right. Okay.
It's Walt
and
behind
you
the
figure
door.
It out before the camera's even revealed it to you. Just like, oh, I love this show.
I know, and it's such a fuck. It's. I also love the you know, they still have those god awful pictures on their wall. You know, that they had in the old house, but now it's just Junior and Skylar. But yeah, it's just once again, Walt just kind of is always, he's like haunting. He's sort of just in the background. You know, we don't. In the previous ones, he appears, and in this one, he's just kind of slowly revealed in this really perverse way. But that scene between them is so beautiful, the way it goes down.
And it's funny, because, like, again, like, this is why we need the name Lambert to kind of describe this kind of presence as well, because, again,
it's not either
again,
of them.
Yeah, it's not Walt or Heisenberg, it's kind of this, it's this guy who's admitted to both himself and to Skylar, which is a very significant person to admit it to, that he didn't do it for his family. He did do it for himself. He wanted to go to his happy place.
He was good at it.
He was good at
and
it.
I think
he wanted to be good at something.
Dialogue-wise, this is the climax of the series. This line.
In
you
a
know,
way, yeah.
Skylar, what I did, please do not tell me you did it for your family. And he went, I did it for me.
Yeah.
There's such catharsis. And it's so bizarre that, you know, this is a show where admitting that guilt is seen as kind of the closest thing to a happy ending.
Yeah.
But here we are. But I also think that, weirdly, Skylar and Walt have grown closer over this last few. I know that sounds weird after Ozymandias.
Yeah.
But I think that sort of there's this sad, this shared sadness that they have. And the fact that by the way, we haven't mentioned the most important thing. He wears what he's wearing in the pilot. Did you not notice that? He's wearing the green shirt, the like cream jacket and the brown pants.
Yeah, no, I did notice that. I think that kind of like happens a number of times throughout. It's not just the pilot, is it?
Yeah, it's a common Walt outfit. Still,
but yeah, no, still, yeah, no, I did notice that, and that was a pretty significant, nice little detail. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so she sees the man that she married, and it is quite poignant.
And it is really interesting that in that kind of reversion back to that, I suppose, is that it's the furthest he'll ever get away from it as well, because he's wholly selfish, and he's acknowledging his selfishness.
I know, he's selfless in his selfishness.
Yeah,
I know,
it's a really kind of odd moment, but like makes a lot of sense and kind of, you know.
So this is another.
It's yet another kind of aspect of this really wholly fragmented personality, which, you know, we've seen like multiple very clear allusions to with like the face distortion, and I mean just most of the entire show, really.
Well, also the whole metamorphosis thing.
Oh yeah, that kind of thing
just looks like physically like a different,
the show, it is like evolution.
But the other big thing about this, so he gives her the lottery ticket Hank and Gomi is buried. Once again, he's picking up the pieces, you know, of what he's done, and he's doing it in a way where he has no credit in this scenario, because, you know, he says, say I forced my way in, you know, and I told you. So he wants to give some closure to Marie. He wants to give Skylar something to bargain with.
But he also does want to save some face that he wasn't the, I mean, I didn't know whether or not he was kind of saying to say that he was the one who did it. Because he did say, I'm going to go and get the guys who did it after tonight.
But I think the thing with Skylar is they have some sort of honesty.
Yeah.
So I think there's an understanding that she won't say that. She has to say that he forced his way in. So she's not going to say, oh, but he got the real killers, you know, my husband, the Avenger. It's just another example of Walt doing something that he will feel satisfied with and people will benefit from, but he will not get, it will not aid his legacy. He will not benefit from this. Similarly, this is all added to the fact that he goes sees Holly while she's sleeping. She'll have no memories of him. She won't, you know, there's nothing that
that one hits
this him. Won't aid his kind of memory Yeah. Sorry, her memory of him after he dies, but he just wants to experience her briefly. And it ties back to that video he makes in season two, which by chance I just rewatched today when he's...
talking about...
Not the video at the very start of the series, but when they're having the baby shower and they're all joking. They briefly...
And Walt Jr.'s, like, videoing some poor woman's breasts. And, like, Marie's really... drunk, and Hank's got his Shania Twain fixation.
The Shania Twain fixation.
That was amazing.
It's just a very sweet kind of
moment. Yeah.
Then as he leaves, he watches Walt Jr. or Flynn, and Flynn still thinks that, you know, he will know that the last words Flynn says to him, I hate you, why aren't you dead?
Yeah.
And yet he still just wants to see him. He still just wants to appreciate him on his own terms. It's no longer about how others see him. It's just about his own sense of kind of, you know, closure and his own appreciation of his loved ones. Appreciations of his loved ones' appreciation of him, which was really, you know, what kind of defined his relationship with Jesse.
Yeah, and it was such a... I mean, this is really technical, tiny little nitpick, but like... one thing, this is the only thing I'll say, I think, negatively about the whole thing, was that he watches him from afar, and, he's kind of watching him kind of go through the door, and it's so silent, and it's so kind of tense, and you really know that this is the last time he's ever going to see his son. And then you hear the door close when it's a shot on Walt, and I kind of like the whole silence of it. I really, really like the silence. I mean, this is really just a really nitpicky thing, but just like, if that whole thing had been silent, just like a really, you know, not with a bang, but a whimper again, you know, like, I mean, it's a really, really tiny, tiny, minute kind of detail to pick up on. But you know what I mean? It's just like, I mean, that's about as negative as I'm going to get talking about, I think, anything from the last two seasons, like, really. And I mean, that's really... kind of stupid, but it was just something I noticed. But you know, it still felt very quiet, and just like, that's it, is that there is no goodbye. It's just,
but once again, that whole thing about Walter kind of, or Lambert kind of haunting, haunting. It's like it's outside the stained glass window, and he just fades, he literally fades out of the shot, and that's that Breaking Bad thing of kind of recreating the supernatural using perfectly real or like, you know, non-supernatural technique. So I thought that was a beautiful shot of him fading out of his family's life as he goes to kind of do his big Scarface ending. So that's pretty much it for kind of the family side of Breaking Bad. Yeah. And really all that's left is the crime part of Breaking Bad.
I think it might have been before when he's building the contraption with the gun in the desert. It's kind of, again, like a kind of functional scene, but there is a really nice, dip of the hat to, again, I suppose the title and the tape deck at the beginning in the car with the Mighty Roll. He's humming the Mighty Roland song to himself as he works, which is kind of funny. And just the way it kind of, it almost has, echoes of, Jesse's kind of woodwork kind of moments.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. It's back to doing what he loves. It's science.
Well, I mean, I suppose, you know, it's some kind of just work. It's doing work. It's kind of making something. It's creating something in a way. And, you know, it's a really kind of nice little thing to kind of see. And that's why I suppose I link it to Jesse. And, I mean, obviously with the end, like the very, very end, which, I mean, we will touch on. But it is kind of really nice to see that. And, I mean... you know, as complex as kind of the character is and everything, and like what he's at, the reality of what he's doing is that he's building a machine gun contraption to murder a lot of people.
A lot of Nazis, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, just context aside, some elements of context aside, he's a mass murdering dude, just creating a big contraption to mass murder and humming a Beach Boys song, Yes, He Does It.
Yes. Did you completely get the contraption? Because what I didn't work out was I thought that he was setting it actually up in the hills as a diversion.
Oh, like,
I didn't actually work out that it was in the car, so that did kind of surprise me how efficient and quick it was.
No. I mean, I understood that he'd be putting it in the car, but actually, like, the first, when I saw it on the ground and kind of sat there, it reminded me of, when Gus has his come at me bro moment with the guy from the cartel.
Well, that's what I thought he was going to do. I thought he was going to set it off so it shoots from afar. They all run out, and then he does science. But it's a brilliant twist because we've all been thinking, you know, since we saw Live Free or Die, oh my god, he goes Scarface on them. And you kind of get both. You get him using a giant machine gun, but with science.
Yeah.
And it would be a really kind of ridiculous ending to just have him go out literally in a hail of bullets holding himself. No, Walt's smarter than that. He removes himself from the danger and you know, just takes it out with sort of this precise scientific efficiency.
It is so interesting, kind of the way, again something based on chance. I mean, with the Nazis and kind of all this, is that, you know, he might not get the key back. Will he get the key back? You know, the reality is that he will.
Yeah, and actually, I mean, that's my one little flaw with the episode, is that they kind of... Nah, actually, no, I don't, because I knew he had to get the key back somehow, but I was just so tense. And I really just was like, please do not cut back to him trying to get the key. He's going to get it. Don't show it. It's tense. Oh, fuck. Don't show the key. So there was an extreme tension. But once again, you know, they always make sure they cover their tracks the same way that he mentions he knows what Lydia does in the cafe. They made a point to show him parking strategically. And I don't know. It's weird that I didn't pick up on this. I went, oh, what's he going to do? Why is he parking?
I mean, I had a fair idea, so you don't afterwards
go, but how did he know where to park, sort of thing, which is good. They cover their tracks that way and do it in a kind of semi-efficient, strong way.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny, like, looking at it at the end, like, seeing how, like, the machine guns, like, shot through the car. Did you see that? It was kind of funny, like, I don't know. But, just kind of the entire sequence with the Nazis, like, you know exactly where it's going, you know... exactly, kind of, that it's going to end with, like, some very, very, just a lot of blood. We get the iron aspect of Felino, if you really want to run with that. I suppose the sodium aspect of that equation is really kind of provided by us, more than anything else, at seeing the end of the show. But I think...
Oh, no, because Walt and Skylar cry in this.
I suppose they do, yeah.
But I get what you mean.
Yeah,
yes.
So, I think... You know, I mean, I don't really know that there's a whole lot to say about this scene, except that, you know,
it was awesome.
It was awesome. I suppose I have, like, one kind of comment is that so much of kind of what the show was, particularly earlier, was kind of like focusing on, and I suppose aspects now, like, of Lydia, when she's walking through the corpses that she's controlled, like, and essentially killed, like, with Declan and all those guys. I think it was in. Maybe in... No, I can't remember. Maybe in Confessions or Buried or something. It was a bit earlier. But,
It's Buried.
I think it's Buried. But, you know, kind of that theme of kind of like moral dislocation, being disconnected from the act that you kind of carry out, has kind of been something that we haven't seen in it for a while. As kind of, you know, like, I suppose as heavily as with the, kind of earlier seasons and with Tuco and with...
The way the scene ends out is so similar to Bit by a Dead Bee, because you've got the wrecked car, which is like Walt's car, and then you've got the chair thing.
The chair moving the weird up, massager. The weird massage. Oh,
I mean, that was a massive callback of Jesse's lowrider bouncing. I mean, I don't know if that was a deliberate callback, or if it was just sort of so a Breaking Bad thing to
like,
do.
Like, in such a still space where such carnage has just occurred, that you've got this one kind of inanimate object just still moving.
Yeah, I know.
It's so kind of eerie, and it's so... I mean, I haven't seen anything really kind of do it like that.
It was more eerie than Bit by a Dead Bee, because it was a dead person just writhing, like, almost like a slug. Yeah, it was disgusting.
And you're kind of, like, seeing little kind of bits of movement here and there, and you're not sure who's completely dead or alive, and you're like, oh, maybe he was, because he was in the massage chair, he didn't get killed or whatever, and you're like, nah. And then you see him just, like, moving too eerily, you're just like, nah, he's dead. He's extremely dead.
But it was really violent, the way that scene went down, because it was just... It was blood. It was, yeah, his name. It's Todd.
Kenny or something.
Uncle Jack. Yeah, Kenny. I think it's Kenny.
I think it's Kenny.
There's nothing particularly. I mean, it's cool because lots of Nazis die and it involves science, bitch, but it was really just messy. And they didn't have a shootout in the desert like they do. It was in this disgusting club, quote, dilapidated clubhouse, unquote, crap house,
yeah,
at night. So, you know, Heisenberg, he went out in a blaze of gunfight, but it wasn't this big kind of beautiful aesthetic ending. It was something that was much dirtier, nastier, but fitting with the end, I thought. You know, it was like literally sundown on Walt.
Mm.
But just to take it back a bit, I thought that, you know, the scene between Walt before they go, and you know what, I didn't kind of pick this up, I didn't mention this during when we were talking about Jesse earlier, is that what's so depressing about Jesse is not that he's in this situation, is that he's used to it. It's that this is actually his life. That he just is incredibly familiar and used to this situation. It's not like last episode where he's still struggling and he's, you know, I'm not working for you Nazi fucks anymore.
Yeah.
He's just like, this is actually the status quo he's accepted, which is so horrifying to consider. But then the way Walt plays on Jack's pride and the whole, you owed me, Jesse Pinkman, come back. Yeah. I thought that was really smart, and it's felt completely consistent with Jack's character that he'd do that. Anyway, so just going back to where we were, and after the Nazis are all dead, Todd. And I just love that Todd doesn't go, I don't think he really makes the connection that Walt did it, because, you know, he just can't believe anyone would want to kill his uncle, or that Mr. White would betray him.
Or just, how did that happen? Like, oh my god, it was a gun in a trunk. Like, what does he say? Doesn't he say, he says like, oh, Uncle Jack, look at that. Or does he even say, Mr. White, look at that? Like,
That's what we should take notes for.
Yeah.
But, it was just his reaction. And then when Jesse strangles him.
Oh.
And I think I was saying to the TV, hold it, make it longer, make him suffer. Jesse, you can go for the testicles, maybe. Really.
And you know what? You know what was kind of, again, funny? Walt is watching him die, and you're just like, you didn't intervene before, and you're not going to intervene now. It was kind of like a really kind of
happened in Ozymandias when they took Jesse, and now
Death that will just destroy Jesse, as opposed to a death that Jesse kind of really wants to kind of bring on someone else. So he's like, yeah, no, I'll stick out of this one too.
Yeah, I got an email from Alina, one of our listeners, and she wrote her predictions. Alina?
I think probably Alina. Shout out.
Anyway, I'm not going to read her. It was a predictions of Breaking Bad email she sent. And I'm not going to read it now because we know what happens. But one of the things she said was, Jesse has to kill Todd in a gruesomely awesome way that none of us can imagine in order to sate our bloodlust, hopefully using, science. That's not a prediction. That's literally the shackles. Yeah, with his own bondage. But I mean, it was a terrible way to die.
It was horrible.
Wasn't terrible enough.
Yeah.
He could have, but if they'd gone excessive, it would have been way too pandering. But then speaking of the reverse of Ozymandias, you have Jack in that situation and he's going, wait, I've got, you know, I could have your money. And then he kills him mid-sentence exactly the way Hank got killed.
Yeah, and it was almost a little bit of a callback to that in a way, just in the, I'll save myself in this situation with money. Like literally with barrels, I'm going to save myself the same way. And he's like, nah, mate, he made his mind up 10 seconds ago.
The fact that that's when they choose to use the fucking POV shot where the blood spurts onto camera. Yeah. And because it was a really close shot, so there's something just so uncomfortably gruesome about the way that splattered.
It's kind of funny because you almost don't see the effects of the bullet going into the head because the camera's already covered in gore by the time
it registers. That's the thing. Yeah. It's not actually really graphic. It's more in a strange way. It's suggestive more than anything, but it is so. Ugh.
But I think from there, then just like Walt gives Jesse the gun, and this is, you know, and I never really thought that Jesse was gonna do it.
No, and it had to be this way because it's not only is it a, I'm not going to kill you, I'm not going to take orders from you.
Yeah.
So it works on multiple levels because it's like, don't say this is what I want to do. Say this is what you want me to do. And then after that, I'm not going to do what you want to do. And it's nice kind of after Gale, it's like the final person Jesse to kill when Jesse refuses to do it.
The gun the way that he holds the gun as well on him is so reminiscent of Full Measures, the end of season 3. And I mean, that was the first thing in my head, just Jesse holding gun pointed at someone's face, just point blank range. And you're like, Gale, can't think of anything with Gale at that point. So, you know, and I think, yeah. I mean, you've pretty much covered it quite well there, is that that's essentially what that is.
I mean, it kind of, in a really brief way, it sort of, it nicely refutes and gives closure to a lot of the various layers of their relationship.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this is perfect. A lot of people are like, we didn't get a lot of closure with Jesse. I'm like, we couldn't. They had debased him so much.
Yeah.
He was so... The only option he had was to fly off into the sunset and start anew. He couldn't... His relationship with Walt was too destroyed. Andrea's dead. He'd been tortured and a slave for the last few months. All we could get was that kind of brief look of recognition and sort of gratitude, but also, fuck you, you sold me out. After Walt rescues him, and that's all we could get and all we needed. And then just that real beautiful cathartic moment of Jesse speeding off, and screaming and laughing and crying. It's quite hilarious though, when people point out that it's almost like a Need for Speed, which of course is Aaron Paul's next movie.
Yeah. So,
so that now funny. Knowing that it's yeah. a bit,
but also just there, like where I think, I mean, we pretty much covered Lydia getting, done by the Ryzen, but there's also the, thing, where Walt's ring, where the personalized ringtone on Todd's phone for Walt was, Thomas Dolby, Blinded Me with Science.
Oh, Lydia.
Lydia. I just found that quite funny. I was like, wait, is that diegetic or not? Because it was just really funny. I was just like...
Yeah, it was a great character moment
I mean, that was for what Todd, I was
because
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just this pathetic crush type thing. But also it's a great moment, like in the series, like, hey, remember Lydia? And then we see her kind of sniffling and I'm like, yeah. Oh, she's had the ricin. And yeah, as I said, the ricin, and because that's just and before just, Jesse leaves, like the ricin is almost the last thing that really comes into play, depending on...
Yeah. And then, so yeah, like everything's pretty much tied up at that point. Well, you get the feeling that everything has been acknowledged, and there's a finality to kind of everything that's kind of been touched on.
And then
we've got Walt in the Nazi meth lab, and it's funny because I mean, it wasn't his lab. But the reality is that it is a lab, and there's just this one shot. Every shot in this is brilliant and perfect. But I think this bit probably hit me a lot harder than anything else in the episode because I knew it was the last minute or so of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was a confirmation and real dip of the hat to kind of an aspect that I really, really picked up on a lot, particularly in our season 3 cast, talking about how, I mean, as much as like we focus on the... I'm in the Empire business and everything, and kind of like while becoming a figurehead of this criminal organization, is that a lot of what kind of like got him there in the first place and earlier seasons when he was still both cooking and running, managing, you know, not getting murdered and all this shit, was that ultimately, whenever he was struggling, he'd always go back to chemistry, and chemistry was always his happy place.
Yeah, he was, and that's what he says to Skylar, you know, earlier, I was good at it.
I was good at it, yeah.
And also he, you know, it goes back to what he says to Gail, I love the chemistry.
And it's something for me, last week, I mentioned it, the sentence that he notices, Gretchen and Elliot, the sentence that he notices on to make him say, no, switch it back was, for us, it's always been about science first.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's a really nice, it's such a nice way to end it. Cause like, it really kind of takes you back to the characteristic in him that kind of made it all possible in a way, but like not in terms of the, I mean, one of the characteristics that made it possible or made it kind of happen in a way, not the pride or any of that. It was actually quite a, you know, the one kind of admirable trait in him that made him kind of start doing it in a way that there was something he did that made him happy.
Well, it's not admirable or admonishable. It's just kind of, he wants to use his skills, you know, and that's the thing. It all comes back to the idea that he is a talented man and that talent was just left untapped.
Like the man feeling impotent, but who can do great, terrible, yes, but great things.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really where so much of the impetus for everything that he's done is, that he really feels like this Aussie man. Absolutely. That was crap. But you know, it is really about kind of like that, just kind of being good at it, really.
Exactly. But that's the thing. It's such a perfect end. It's neither judgment for him or like some cheap redemption. It's him with the things he loved, with himself,
baby blue,
and his chemistry. And yeah, and then of course, you know, well, I guess I got what
I
deserved.
And the bloody hand on the whatever it is, the cooker. It's so interesting because it is so out of place, but it's a world like the chemistry and the equipment. And the blood and the gore and the horror of the drug world is that the mix these two very kind of almost dissimilar aspects.
It's blood,
like
meth,
like there's and you know it's the Walt Heisenberg again, you know, it's the chemist and the psychopathic gene criminal mastermind, and you know it's kind of these different aspects of the same personality used in different ways. You know, there's the It's just, and again, like in a way, it's kind of a Macbeth kind of out damn spot.
But it's not a Macbeth ending,
right?
See, because Macbeth.
No, I mean,
it's more of a. I guess.
I mean, just in the out damn spot kind of aspect, like the blood on the cooker, whatever you call it. I just found that to be quite. Because I mean, we have.
But
had,
my Macbeth comparison works up towards the Amandeus, and right, then now it's sort of like a Hamlet.
Yeah,
I think sure. it's anyway. But just the thing about this ending. Is that someone described it as, you know, because a few people have been saying perhaps this is too neat, this is too nice, and I'm like, only could Breaking Bad have the ending the protagonist bleeds to death in a Nazi meth lab surrounded by police, and that's the happy ending.
Yeah.
So I think it's just perfect. And you know, if you watched the first episode and then didn't watch anything and came back, you'd think, Jesus, that's horrible. But you know, to us it's kind of slightly and what I love is that final shot. It's reminiscent of two different shots. It's the MRI
Season shot
1
from Pilot and Gliding Overall.
Yeah, and Gliding Overall. Yeah, and I think another one. Yeah, from Pilot and Gliding Overall, and of course the shot from Crawl Space. And it's just like in the MRI shot in the Pilot. It's this incredible sense of uncertainty, of unease, of like crisis. In the shot in Crawl Space, it's this scent of frantic panic, of you know this kind of rabid animal.
And then in Gliding Overall, it's kind of this almost the inevitability of you know the in a way that it's all kind of come back to him. At like he can't escape.
Yeah, it's all the chickens coming. And then in this moment, it's just pure kind of. It's peace. I mean, he's dead. Or
it's
he's died. I don't know if he's
it's
dead.
It's just ultimate finality. It's
or felinity.
No.
Another thing.
It's just conclusion. Like, there's such a.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's
you
so
know,
final.
You know it's the last shot as soon as it starts.
You're
like,
you're just like,
and
that's
you know
the last
exactly
shot.
Where that camera's going. You know exactly the motion it's going to go. And you're like, yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can kind of feel like just one day Vince Gilligan walked in and like, all right, guys, I know what our final shot's going to be.
I reckon he knew it for a fucking long time.
Yeah. One other thing about just the way they visually chose to represent this last moment was I've kind of talked about Walt and the ghost thing and how he kind of pops in and out. Is the way they do the reflection. It's like you see the reflection in the whatever piece of equipment it is in the lab. And then he like stains it with his hand, and then he just kind of disappears from the reflection. You don't see him fall or anything. You just see the hand move. And then he just is not there. And then the next frame is him lying down. He doesn't fall over. He's not blown away. He's not, you know, he doesn't slowly die. He's just gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one moment he's there and then the next he's gone. He's dead. He's on the floor.
Yeah.
So,
that's Breaking
to
Bad.
To Vince.
That's Breaking Bad, bitches.
Thank you, Vince. Brilliant episode.
Brilliant show.
The problem... Now, we will send in what I'd love everyone to do if you've been enjoying the podcast. First of all, stick around for our big bad.
We're going to do a big, big, big series. Where I reckon... I mean,
and I think
we're
going
to
do
like
do
our favourite 10 episodes. I'd like to do... Like, we will have honourable mentions and stuff, so it will probably be a little bit self-indulgent. We'll... call out like favorite comic moments and a lot of different kind of moments and music cues and all this
and
stuff.
And
it'll be basically just a big old Breaking Bad nerdathon.
It'll be free association.
So much fun.
So if you've been listening to the show and you like it, listen to that and also wait for when, and we're going to do this with the DVD series. That's the time I've set us.
We're going to do season four
and five retrospectives. Because if people are marathoning Breaking Bad around then, it would be nice to have the complete Cavaliers Break Bad set.
And
we're actually going to release a box set ourselves on cassettes.
How many hours would we have done by the end of this on Breaking Bad? About 20, 25?
Yeah, 20. And the other thing that would be really cool is if you could email your favorite... I'm sorry, my mic's really fucking up. If you could email your favorite episodes, moments, funniest episodes, and why to cavaliersdocinema@gmail.com, that would be great. Or visit us or leave a comment on cavaliersdotelevision.blogspot.com. We also have a Twitter account, which I never use, but yeah.
Does anybody use Twitter?
Well, yeah. Yeah, this really? Is actually the kind of... Well, like, yeah,
not
when
in
you
Australia.
Do...
Australia.
No, well, they do, but, like, the kind of people who do it are the people who have, like, Breaking Bad podcasts.
Right.
This is one, so we should.
We should.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.
It's been an amazing...
It's been real.
It's been a journey. And maybe we'll find out what happens to Huel. It's been so much fun. The problem I have is that I think literally the three best episodes of Breaking Bad are the final three. And I can't choose my favorite.
Poor you. Like, oh,
yeah,
no.
I don't know. It's just feel like when I reveal my list, it's just going to be like season five and four and two and one and three. Is Ozymandias still your favorite?
Yeah.
I literally cannot decide between Ozymandias, Granite State, and Felina. I rewatched Granite State. It's
incredible.
A masterpiece. I
so
thought Felina was
good.
As well. So those three combined, I think, are just brilliant. I think they're the three best episodes the show has done.
We'll have a lot
of
fun.
We'll meditate on it.
We'll get really, really official, and we won't reveal our list to each other until we're saying it.
Yes, and I'll also we'll hopefully have more stuff up for Cavaliers Do Television. I'm not gonna fucking review any more Dexter because that shit's off. But maybe a bit of Boardwalk Empire, Homeland starting, some cool stuff. So thanks so much for listening. And here is Badfinger, Baby Blue. And have a good one.